During his 10 years in prison, Jack Deebs created his own world. It made him very successful.
You're Jack Deebs, the creator of Cool World, right? I can't believe this.
Now he thinks he's going home to the real world. But he's wrong. Real wrong.
Welcome to my world.
You're not in Kansas anymore!
Freeze. Cool World Police.
I'm a cartoonist. I drew all this.
This place exists with or without you.
Get a little closer here, babe. Give us a kiss.
Go away.
I'm out of here.
I've been waiting for you, darling.
Noids do not have sex with doodles. It's the oldest law in Cool World.
If that happens, you call me.
I got it, boss.
Since it's only a dream, indulge your fantasies. The man is in the bedroom.
Are you gonna follow the rules? Or are you gonna follow your instincts?
You're about to make an unscheduled trip to the other side.
Buster.
This is gonna be the biggest disaster the Cool World has ever seen.
Stop! Cease!
Nobody's gonna stop me now.
You look good in the flesh. It's almost a shame I gotta take you back.
I just wanna be real.
You gotta slow down.
Not on your life, pal.
Not Fatty, you kidding?
This place should be erased.
Hey, it's a living.
Cool World.
We may not be real for you as yet, but we will be.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We are part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website, themaindamie.com, or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, at themaindamie. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gbnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This a Movie. This is Anthony DelVecchio, and with me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey, how's it going?
I think I may have found the movie equivalent of that saying, a poor man something. While watching this movie after watching Roger Rabbit earlier in the year.
Sure. Yeah. It does everything not better.
Yeah. It's very much, it's like, oh, this actually exists. It's not just some stupid comparison when people don't know how to compare through things.
Yeah.
This is so much like somebody got inspired by that, but didn't know why that movie was good.
Yeah.
My wife has a bone to pick with us. She says we need to stop being super horny.
Does she listen to the podcast?
Well, no, she sees the movies. And so she goes, so we're watching this and she says, you guys are way too horny. And I was like, well, wait a minute, not me, because I didn't pick this movie. I'm trying to suck up to my wife still after 13 years. And so she goes, all right, well, who picked this? I said, Mark picked it. All right, well, who picked Barbarella? Anthony picked Barbarella. Okay. Well, who were most of the quotes by? Like, me.
In Barbarella's defense, this is much hornier. But before we get fully into that, we're going to introduce, we have a guest this week. He's one of the co-hosts of Hop Nation, who is currently celebrating, they just released 200 episodes. So congratulations. We have Steve on the podcast. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm never coming back. This movie's terrible.
Full experience.
Steve, why don't you introduce, tell the listeners, all two dozen of them, what Hop Nation is.
So Hop Nation USA is a craft beer focused podcast, but we don't have any like seriousness or snootiness to us. Even though I'm drinking an IPA tonight, my co-host hates IPAs, and generally we run on coffee stouts anyway. But we also like to interview breweries and just tell their story. But when we're not doing that, it's usually just bashing on craft beer and just having a good time.
Great. Yeah. As we start off every episode, we usually talk about things we watched this week. So, Steve, why don't you tell us, what have you been watching?
I've been watching the Venom 2 trailer on loop. until it makes sense to me.
Okay. Did you like the first movie?
No, I didn't.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I don't get it.
I didn't like the first movie because it was such a cheap, and it's all Sony studio. I can just tell it's all Sony because they don't want to invest money in making good movies. So they just made this muddy, dark-ass film where Venom fights a thing that looks like Venom. You can't tell the two of them apart. It doesn't make any sense. And now they're doing the same thing this movie, but red.
That's just the perfect summary of Venom 2.
Yeah.
I have seen either the trailer or the first film, but I did watch Upgrade, and that was excellent. That was the best Venom movie that year.
Upgrade fucking rules. I love that movie.
Such a good movie.
Is that all?
I don't know. I just, I finished up Invincible. And I haven't watched too many movies aside from this one. I've been watching just like a lot of series because like Yasuke got released on Netflix and finished up Invincible and tried to get into Jupiter's Legacy, but not so much yet.
Okay, what about you, Dan? What have you been watching?
So I haven't watched anything new, but I kind of have a pickle on my hands here. My wife might be boycotting Disney movies. Okay. So now, like, that doesn't really matter. Like, I could go without watching Disney movies. But that also, like, includes Marvel movies. Like, okay. Well, now, I can't follow you over that bridge. Everything else I will. So the reason why, and I'll just, like, real quick. We're looking to vacation this summer. And we were thinking about going, you know, let's try to go to Disney, visit my sister. It's incredibly expensive, as I'm sure you gentlemen know.
Yep.
And one of the vacationing tips on the website is, hey, you can't afford to come here, get a second job and save up. I swear to God, that's what it says. Hey, you know, a lot of people have a hard time saving up to vacation with us, but maybe get a side hustle like Uber Eats or like DoorDash or something. And,
have you tried not being poor?
Right. I would rather them just say, hey, we don't want your kind here anymore. Just only rich folk are now allowed in Disney. But that really skeeved Jen out. And, you know, it bothered me. So we were texting today and she goes, you know, I don't think I'm going to really support anything they do anymore. Like, oh, you know, that like right on, you know, fight the power kind of thing. It's like, I'm not going to watch their movies. I was like, but now... just Disney movies or Marvel movies? Because, yeah, like, again, I don't need to see another Toy Story or another Finding Nemo, anything like that. But I'm really waiting for, like, Doctor Strange 2 and Spider-Man 3. And, like, can we just, like, do it after that? Can we pick at them and after those movies? So that's where... like I have that conundrum.
So let me just float this towards you. Why not get a NordVPN? And I don't know if they're a sponsor of the show, but you know, you can just kind of list those couple movies that you want to see. You're not putting money in their pocket.
Yeah. You're sticking it to them.
True. That's a good point. So that
you can get her on board to just be like, yeah, we're gonna take from them.
we'll be like modern day pirates.
There you go. You've always wanted to be a pirate.
I have. That's one of my dreams.
There you go.
Everybody wins except Disney.
Okay, Mark, sticking with you. Yep. What did you watch this week?
So I'm glad Dan forgot about this because it would give me something to talk about. Me and Dan watched New Mutants on Friday.
Oh, shit. We did.
See, he completely forgot. Yeah, so that's the one thing I watched this week.
So Cool World is the second worst movie you guys watched this week.
No. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was, but I was going in with pretty low expectations. It could have been much worse. I think it's saved for the fact that they didn't try and go to all these different... I think being in one location kind of helps it not be completely terrible, because it kind of feels like they, you know, at least had an idea and an attempt to tell like this one closed off story and not try and tie it into a bunch of stuff outside of references. I think if I would have seen this pre-Queen's Gambit, I may have not been as mesmerized by Anya Taylor-Joy. It's fine. I think Maisie Williams was Irish in this movie, maybe Scottish. Ooh. I don't think she knew at points which she was in this movie. Yeah, I mean, if it's sad that that's the way X-Men goes out in terms of Fox movies or... Yeah, it was something that it's like, okay, I saw it. You know, I don't have to keep wondering or seeing it when I go on Disney Plus or HBO Max or anything like that, wherever we watched it on. I don't recommend it per se, unless if you're a completist for X-Men movies. You got to watch everything X-Men. Finish this off. It's not as bad as Dark Phoenix.
As for me, I watched one thing, and it kind of begs a question from you guys. What is like one movie that you feel like you should have seen, but you haven't? It's like a blind spot, because that's I corrected a blind spot for me this week.
Let's let our guest go, because I need to think.
Steve, you are a film major. What is one movie that like would get you kicked out of Rod and Mora's class?
Man, see, that's the thing, is like I try to correct those blind spots as often as possible, so I honestly don't have one. Maybe Gone with the Wind. Oh no, you know what? I know exactly what my blind spot is. I've never seen Lawrence of Arabia.
That's one. That's a blind spot for me as well. But that was not what I corrected this year, this week. What about you, Dan?
Oh, I have a perfect one, and I'll definitely catch some shit for this, and I should. Raging Bull.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I started to watch it, and then I got tired. I was like, oh, you know, I'll come back to it. And then they took it off Netflix. Oh, well, it just wasn't meant to be.
Never going
to
happen now. What about you, Mark?
I think the prime example might be a lot of those 70s filmmaker movies. The most big example is Midnight Cowboy. Okay. That's a Dustin Hoffman one, right?
That's Dustin Hoffman and
Dustin Hoffman, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So, okay. Like, those movies from that era, like, I didn't see many of them, and I probably should have, because the ones I've seen I've loved. But, yeah, just they... Mostly that, you know, that section of time in movies, I haven't really seen as many as I should have.
Okay. So for me, this was a big one, and I've probably seen bits and pieces before, but never complete. This weekend, I watched Aliens with an S.
Oh, wow.
For whatever reason, never really watched it until this weekend. And it's awesome. I still prefer Alien, but it's awesome.
Have you seen like 3 and 4 as well?
I don't think I've seen 3, but I've seen 4, and I've seen Prometheus.
Okay.
And I haven't seen Covenant, but just Aliens was a blind spot for me. And it's awesome. When the door rises up and she's in that mech suit, which I've seen that scene 100 times, but that's like such a great reveal. Awesome.
I feel like we've talked about, were you lying to me for years about it?
I mean, I'm sure I've seen 100 clips of Aliens. Oh, probably okay. Not. You know, I have enough knowledge of Aliens to, you know, have a conversation with it. I don't think I've ever actually said, oh yeah, I totally seen Aliens, bro.
I feel so betrayed right now. Because I've done that with people where, you know, I feel like if I haven't seen the movie and I'm around others who are not snobby, but I consider like, oh, you know, I don't want to embarrass myself. Like, I'm trying to think of a movie right now. Like, I haven't seen all of Clockwork Orange.
Sure.
Okay.
But I'll lie and say I have seen Clockwork Orange, because I don't want to be that guy. Like, oh, yeah, well, of course, you know, I'm the Droogs. I know them and stuff like that. But, yeah, I can't hold my own, really.
Especially when you go see the new Space Jam movie. You got to be able to go. It's true. I know who those guys are.
Yeah, hey, I know them.
I feel like Ant, and now that you have better knowledge of it, I always felt that the arguments people would have over Alien and Aliens is sort of like the Terminator and Terminator 2 arguments of preference. And there's definitely a preference one way or the other with those two.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have a change in preference now, or
I'm still Alien. Yeah. Well, I always kind of assumed that was going to be Alien, and it kind of confirmed, but I'm also a Terminator 2 person, so, you know, James Cameron, I guess, is a little hit or miss for me, but Aliens was awesome. I can't really say miss, but I liked Alien. I liked the more horror versus the more action.
I think the character of the alien, of the xenomorphs, works better as a horror character than just, you know, the Starship Troopers kind of, you know, way that Aliens plays out. But I mean, they're both still great movies. I don't have a preference. I appreciate them both.
Sure. So,
yeah.
I wish they would have gone back to more of the horror genre with the Alien franchise, and because they really, after Alien, it just sticks with the action. Like, I guess it's more of an action franchise at that point. There's not really much horror in it. Maybe
I think 3 has a good amount of horror element to it, because that was like the David Fincher one. That is, it's on the prison planet, and it's basically just a whole bunch of people locked in a prison with the alien. It's very dark. It's very grimy. They don't have weapons because they're prisoners, obviously. So I think that one's a little bit more horror than the other ones. But yeah, you're right. Like Resurrection, AVP, that series is fucking action schlock.
Yeah. Wasn't Alien 3 Alien 3 or Resurrection when Sigourney Weaver makes the behind the back?
That's Resurrection.
Okay, yeah. Good. So I was going to say, it's not scary if Sigourney Weaver is just, you know, flinging the basketball. It's cool.
Yeah.
But you don't see that in many horror movies.
Yeah, that's the movie with, like, Ron Perlman. I think he flips, like, upside down with handguns and shoots handguns. It's either Ron Perlman or Sigourney Weaver that pulls that. And then, that one's ridiculous.
That was a mess. That movie was a mess.
I think that was the first Alien movie I ever saw. I saw it on V8. I, like, rented it one day when my uncle was babysitting us.
Classic.
Yeah. So I think that's all we got to talk about for this week of what we watched. So we will be right back as you listen to some ads and pay some bills. We'll be back in a second. And welcome back. Now it's time to talk about this week's movie. And this week, Mark picked a doozy. Yeah. So, Mark, why don't you introduce this week's movie?
This week, I chose the movie Cool World from 1992, starring Brad Pitt. I will take 99.9% of the blame, and 0.01% of the blame will go for Anthony for nixing Revenge of the Killer Tomatoes.
I did not nix. So, first you said Expendables, which we just did Stallone, and I thought that would have been a boring episode, to be honest with you. I don't think Expendables is specifically bad. It's just kind of bad. And then you gave me three options. The first one was Clue, and I might have almost kicked you off the show for suggesting that Clue was a bad movie.
It wasn't. I was just, we've done good movies. We did RoboCop on this podcast, for Christ's sake.
That was a viewer request, so we happily obliged. And then you said Return of the Killer Tomatoes or Revenge of the Killer, Return of the Killer Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And this movie. And I just said that Return of the Killer Tomatoes is more of a parody, so making fun of a parody is a little bit like, you know, what are you doing? I don't even remember how I put it, but more or less, it was just like, how are you going to make fun of a movie that's making fun of itself?
Yeah, it's in on the joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I will take that much responsibility for it.
Still taking that 99.99.
So the main reason why I came down to those two was because I always like in this podcast every so often when we do a movie from an actor's career, either early on or when he obviously took a paycheck. So I saw for those two, it had Brad Pitt and George Clooney were the stars of either of those. So that's why they got on my list. But yeah, I remember my distinct memories of this movie. I didn't remember how boring bad it was. The main memory I had was being between the ages of 8 and 10 and seeing it in the Blockbuster and sort of going, I should rent that, but, you know, my mom's not going to let me. And by the way, it's PG-13 for some reason, which, okay. And then when I finally saw it a little bit older, sort of like your explanation for how you saw Alien Resurrection, was like an older cousin had decided to finally rent the movie from a Blockbuster because they remembered it when they were younger. And I thought I liked it, but after watching it again, I'm just like, I don't know what I was thinking. I don't know if this coincides with me having watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit very recently, that this kind of movie, I can see all the things that they did absolutely wrong and was wondering how this was made 4 years later and looks so terrible at points. And you can tell, maybe I just don't like the artwork of this movie. Not entirely sure, but that's sort of me now not trusting my memory of movies after seeing this.
I think it's because you just stopped being horny. Yeah. After you get over horny, this movie fucking blows.
That's true.
Right.
That's true. Okay, less horny. Got it.
Less horny. Not completely. It's never fully away, right?
Right.
Yeah. You got to be a little horny or the show gets boring.
What about you, Steve? Where are you coming from with Cool World?
So, like, kind of similar to Mark, like, I had memories of, like, this being in Blockbuster and feeling like not supposed to watch it. And I also had, I believe the first time I saw it was on Cinemax, like, late at night. So it had kind of that built-in taboo with Cinemax already. And I don't think I watched it all the way through, but, like, I was just a kid. I don't think I understood it as well. And Cinemax had, like, this period of time where they were running, like, adult animation late at night. So they also did Fritz the Cat, which is when I saw that movie as well. I didn't know they were both Ralph Bakshi at the time. But now that I'm older, and now that you guys made me rewatch this as an adult, this movie is so goddamn boring and nonsensical. And Ralph Bakshi makes animated films the same way Italian horror directors make films, in that they just like imagery, but they have no sense of story. And it's ugh.
What about you, Dan?
Yeah, so I saw this movie as a kid. I was at my grandparents' house with my cousin, and I don't think they knew what it was. It was just like basically, oh, you know, it's a cartoon or whatever. So we're going to let our grandchildren watch this. And then they left us alone for the whole thing. So I watched the whole movie. And yeah, it was awesome as a little kid. It was like, oh, like big boobies. This is great. Even if it's, you know, it's essentially a hentai movie. You know,
that doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, it's a wannabe hentai movie. And I realized as an adult watching this, the problem with this movie is there's too much going on. Mm-hmm. Every scene has some random shit in it. Like there'll be a scene where two characters are talking, and then out of nowhere, like a line of random cartoon characters will just speed across the scene. A disembodied head will float through. And it never breathes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's super obvious that when Brad Pitt or Gabriel Byrne, right?
Gabriel Byrne, yep.
Whenever they're talking to one of the toons, they're never looking them directly on. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're looking past them. And when they hold an object, a cartoon object, it's blatantly not there. There's a scene where Brad Pitt takes out his badge, and it's basically like he just holds up like a hand, mm-hmm. and the badge is plastered on. Roger Rabbit came out, what, 88? 88. And it's infinitely better looking.
Yep.
I don't know. I will say I've always dug Ralph Bakshi's artwork. It's very unique.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the style is like incredibly bizarre. It's almost like an H.R. Giger type of look, like gothic, and like the buildings have teeth and like they're screaming or whatever. It's cool. It's also super creepy and definitely not for kids. But this is also the guy who animated and directed The Lord of the Rings. So he's kind of, Ralph Bakshi is like, he's crazy, but I respect his art style. But yeah, this movie, as a kid, it's awesome because, again, horny kid. But then as an adult who is like losing his horniness, it's like not great.
Gotcha. Yeah, so for me, again, like you guys, I saw this probably when I was too young, probably 11 or 12. I think I caught it on basic cable. I think I remember the posters sitting in the movie rental place for a while. And yeah, like you guys said, I think this movie just solidifies how much of an underrated director Robert Zemeckis is for his work on Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and how he was able to make that so seamless 6 years or 4 years before this movie came out. If this movie's only thing that it wanted to accomplish was that you could consider yourself fucking a cartoon, it succeeds, I guess. As far as cartoons go, yes, Hollywood is very fuckable, but that's more or less the extent to the point of this movie. It's really all it is. There's barely a plot besides her just wanting to fuck Gabriel Byrne so she becomes a person. Even the music video for A-ha's Take On Me was a better example of this kind of idea. It's wild how, and this movie is not super cheap in terms of, they spent a good amount of money on this. They spent like $30 million to make this piece of shit. I don't know how much they spent on Roger Rabbit, probably a lot more, but yeah, the people lost money on this for sure. Yeah.
Now, wasn't there like a big dispute about the script? Like there was a bunch of rewrites or something like that? Like,
so yes. So Ralph Bakshi originally envisioned this to be kind of a hard R sort of movie. Violence, much more sex and all that kind of stuff. And that might have worked better than this, but apparently there was a meeting that happened about halfway through production where Kim Basinger was like, I want to make a movie where I could go to, I think this quote is, a children's hospital and show the children that. And Ralph Bakshi was like, that would have been a great note for you to give me before we started production. And then one of the producers agreed with Kim Basinger, and then it kind of, you know, really stripped this of any sort of edge, really. Because, you know, it's a movie not for kids, but it's like barely not for kids. It's not super, like, it's a PG-13 movie. It really feels that way.
From what I read, because I was doing a little bit of research, and from what I read, Bakshi actually wound up punching that producer and wanted to quit the film, and then they threatened to sue him for breaking his contract, so they forced him to stay on set and finish the movie.
That's kind of awkward.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it kind of shows if you just, it genuinely feels like nobody wants to be on that set except for Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, Gabriel this is not a good movie. I don't even know where to even go with this. Yeah.
Do you remember when Kim Basinger was a thing?
Yeah, she's bad in this movie too.
Oh yeah. And this is gonna sound kind of mean spirited, but I liked her more as a cartoon.
there is a little bit of a downgrade, not gonna lie.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kim.
See, I also was kind of taken aback by that, because when she transforms from cartoon to human, like, I don't know, I had to look it up because she looked kind of older than what I expected.
Yeah, 92.
I didn't know how old she was. She was actually almost 40 when she did this movie.
Yeah, that is a little weird.
I was kind of surprised by that. And then, like, the makeup department did her no favors with the extreme close-ups. And I was like... Yeah. And I didn't know if I was supposed to, like, go, oh, like, this is what they just, you know, become. They become, you know, like, he was going for a stylistic thing of, oh, yeah, you become a real, real human with flaws. Because they showed, like, a lot of, like, you know, Hollywood sun damage. And, like, that's kind of uncommon for film to, like, allow their stars to look flawed. But I wonder if they did that on purpose.
Yeah. The only thing I kept thinking of with Kim Basinger through this movie is, was this the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man 3 moment where she did not want to be on this movie or do anything, so she completely overacted everything when she was Human Holly to just make it worse? So that's all I kept thinking when those moments came up. It's just amazing to me that we talk about jokingly the Take On Me video and, you know, Roger Rabbit. But the first moment where I was like, they didn't have a budget or didn't think, was the first time Brad Pitt walks in Cool World and everything is cardboard, you know?
Oh, yeah. That happens a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they didn't even try to mesh it in. And it's just like, this can't be 4 years. This had to be before, right? This was the before animation. Yeah. But yeah, a lot of that stuff disappointed me. I just thought it was going to be like a very similar, you know, in terms of production value as Roger Rabbit, but just trying to be more adult. And it was not that.
Yeah. So apparently, originally, Ralph Bakshi wanted Drew Barrymore, who was like 17 in 1992. So that's...
Yeah, that makes sense for Bakshi, though, because Dan already pointed out, like, this is... Or, yeah, you guys already pointed out that, like, this is borderline early hentai.
Yeah.
And, like, Ralph Bakshi just basically catered to perverts when he wasn't doing high-end stuff like Lord of the Rings.
Right.
And I guess the reason why he doesn't work anymore is because Suncoast Video came along with anime, and everybody got to see
it. Yeah, put him out of a job.
This is the last feature film, is this movie.
Yeah, last of his pervert works that he could put out.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a movie that perverts would love. Not that I am a pervert, so I would have no idea.
Well, no, we don't love the film either, so.
Right. Yeah, I think it suffered from, like Mark said, the Spider-Man 3 syndrome. I guess because Bakshi wanted one thing, the studio wanted completely different. And Bakshi was just like, well, screw it then. I'm just not going to really give them what they want 100%. And I'll just kind of throw a little bit of a temper tantrum. And I'm not going to make a coherent story. It's going to be all over the place.
I think that's letting him off the hook for a little bit too much, to be honest with you. Saying that this was a rebellion. I just think it's a shitty story.
And like, it doesn't make sense in the way that, you know, Brad Pitt shows up in Cool World in 1945.
Yep.
But then it's all in Gabriel Byrne's imagination in 1992.
There are no rules. There's only one rule set forward in this movie, and that's Noids can't fuck tunes.
No boinking.
Otherwise, they have people have powers that come out of nowhere, and decisions are made, and things happen that are not explained throughout this entire movie. And we're all left with just, well, I know this one thing about this movie. Noids can't fuck tunes.
Yeah, and then they drop this whole, like, rule to the world out of nowhere, which would have been fun to know beforehand, that if a Noid gets killed by a tune while they're a doodle, you know, they become one.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way to bring Brad Pitt back, and with his awful doodle.
They did him dirty.
His animation is awful.
Man.
It looks like if somebody asked sketch James Dean from memory.
yeah, it's a complete mess of a movie.
But Mark, if they did let out that one rule early, then you would just spend the whole movie thinking about, well, if Lonette just kills him, he will just come back to life as a toon, so they'd be able to fuck. They could be happy and fuck together.
I think they could put that out earlier, though, in a different way. Like, if they had a toon die in the real world, they become a person, but they're a dead person.
Right.
You know, because they're dead. Yeah. But then if you die in the toon world, you become a toon. So, you know, you kind of can go back and forth with that. But, yeah, there's no rules to this. I hate it just as much as Harry Potter, because Harry Potter is the same thing of just introducing Deus Ex Magica anytime they need something to happen.
Yeah.
Sure. Because J.K. Rowling's a shitty writer.
So now you can't bang a toon, because then the toon becomes a real person. Now, like, how, like, what is that when you do you have to, like, climax in the toon? Is that what like the DNA of a person kind of gets sucked up into the toon because they're ink?
Welcome to our Patreon/OnlyFans portion of the podcast.
Right. Well, because now I'm curious, are you giving your essence to the tune?
Yes. Well, let's see. We're in 1992 now, so, you know, we're kind of in the time of Bill Clinton in defining what is sex.
Right.
Because I was wondering as well, like, do hand jobs and oral not count in this?
Right. Ooh, that's a good point.
Because the whole time.
I bet if he got his hard R, we would know the answers to that question.
It's probably true.
Yeah, so much missed opportunity there.
Yeah, because the whole time we have Brad Pitt refusing his two friend Lynette.
Yeah.
But it's like they've never done hand stuff or anything. Like,
Like, can he go down on her?
Right. Does phone sex count?
Yeah. What if he sits in the corner and watches as the spider cucks him? Is that okay?
Yeah, like he's living vicariously through what Nails, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, like, if this was a hard R, there's no way you get Brad Pitt and Gabriel Byrne to be in this movie, right?
I think it's early enough in their careers that maybe.
You definitely get Brad Pitt.
I think Brad Pitt's weird. I think he's a weird dude, so I think he'd be, like, totally into doing a Ralph Bakshi movie.
Man, like, how far he's come then, right? I mean, obviously he's a legend, and he's, like, he's helped produce some of the best movies in the past, you know, decade.
Yeah.
And this is kind of where he got his start, like,
pretty much.
A tune.
I think he had done, I'm going to pull it up, I think, what was
Thelma
this?
And Louise before
this. Thelma and Louise before this. I think this was the same year as Legends of the Fall, or the other one, the other Montana movie that he did. So this was 1992. He did Cool World. A River Runs Through It was the one that he did.
Okay.
And before this, he did Thelma and Louise the year before, and California True Romance would have been 93. So he's still pretty early. Not yet in Interview with the Vampire. So he's still pretty early in his career.
Yeah.
So, early enough where he would have to take a hard R.
I think he would have, like, embraced it. That's what I was
saying. I think he would have been into it just because of the other things he's made. Like, he's made weird Coen brother films. You know, Seven is pretty graphic. You know, even though it doesn't show much, it still is a very disturbing film.
That's true.
Those two episodes he did on Growing Pains.
Definitely hard R.
Yeah.
So, Cool World from 1992, as we've mentioned, directed by Ralph Bakshi, the director of Fritz the Cat, which is a movie we've already covered, Lord of the Rings animated film, Heavy Traffic, and Fire and Ice, including another movie that I will not say on this podcast. Starring Brad Pitt, Gabriel Byrne, Kim Basinger, Michelle Abrams, Carrie Hamilton, Maurice LaMarche, Stephen Worth, Michael David Lally, Janine Jennings, Charlie Adler, and Candy Milo. Has an IMDb score of 4.9, and I forgot to look up the Rotten Tomatoes score. But budget, $30 million. Box office, $14 million. So it was 16.
I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes score of 27.
Let's take a look. Yeah, we got a couple of pretty good voiceover actors, and Maurice LaMarche and Charlie Adler. Charlie Adler played Ed Bighead in Rocko's Modern Life.
We also had a they call this movie Return.
Yes.
Michelle, she was from Troll 2.
It's from Troll 2, the neighbor girl. Michelle Abrams was in Troll 2. Yeah, she's like the opening scene of Troll 2 where it's like back in foreign times or whatever.
Foreign times.
Is she
she's the girl with the fake freckles in that movie.
Does she voice Helen Lovejoy on The Simpsons?
I don't know.
Because someone in this movie was on The Simpsons.
It's a tomato meter of 4%.
Ooh, I was close.
That makes sense. One.
Yeah. I think they're Maggie Roswell, might have been. She has an uncredited, I think.
Yes, that's who it was. Yeah, she's on The Simpsons.
So do you guys want to get into this razor-thin plot?
Sure. Cannot wait.
Dan, what do you got for us this week?
Okay, just going to give a quick shout out to our friend Tia and her very own podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. So that is a weekly podcast where Tia and her bestest friend ever, Brittany, get together. They run down top 10 lists. So for, this past Mother's Day, they did a top 10 mothers on TV, I believe. So you could go check her out at TC_Stark on Twitter. You can also find some of her stuff at Geek Vibes Nation. So go check out her articles and go give her a listen.
Great. And we are going to take a quick break while you listen to messages from Friends of Podcasts. And we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast,
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale-hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. It's me, George, from the Best Little Horror House in Philly, the show where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest at least. We've talked about groundbreaking classics like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Alien, but we've also got a lot of great ones coming up, including some very fun guests like Len Kabaczynski of Swamp Zombies and Red Letter Media fame, Caroline Williams, the star of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and Chase Williamson from John Dies at the End. So make sure you're subscribed to the Best Little Horror House in Philly, and I'll see you boils and ghouls over there.
And welcome back. Now it's time to get into the plot for Cool World. We open on Las Vegas, 1945, after about like 2 minutes of just credits on a black screen.
Very 90s, the way
that it feels a little time and place.
The early 90s version of After Effects.
We open on Vegas as Frank Harris, played by Brad Pitt, returns home from World War II, and they greet the returning GIs from the airport. As he meets his mom and they go back home to some shitty house in the desert, Frank tells his mom that he has a surprise for her. He takes her outside to show her a brand new motorcycle that he won in a poker game in Italy. Yeah, I'm not a motorcycle guy, but it's an objectively gorgeous bike. And then he wants to show off his riding to his mom. This scene is kind of odd, seeing as how this is his mom and not his girlfriend. I'm not getting strong incest vibes, but it would make a lot more sense.
I didn't get those vibes, but usually when you surprise someone, it's with a gift for them,
right,
not with, hey, I got a surprise for you. Here's my beautiful, and I think it was an Indian. That would make sense for the time, but yeah, it's just like, here's my beautiful red motorcycle for me to ride.
And you see the look on her face too. She's like, oh, it's beautiful.
Cool.
And thanks for leaving. Like, it's right outside the front door. He leads her around the back and to the front.
Yeah.
So let's take the longest way possible.
Just her tripping over all that, all their shit.
All the chickens.
Dirt farm that they got in the middle of the Nevada desert.
Yeah, it's a very strange gift to present your mom.
As they're riding, a drunk couple stumbles out of a bar in the middle of the day, and they eventually crash into the motorcycle. Frank and his mom go flying, and Frank immediately has a war flashback until he stumbles upon his mom, lifeless on the ground. Eventually, the cops come and take statements, and the ambulance bags up his mom. At the same time, a cartoon professor opens up a portal to the real world. Frank screams out in anguish and then transports himself to that toon world.
I'm surprised that the people that caused the accident stayed behind.
Right, yeah. I guess maybe the car was busted. Maybe they couldn't hit and run.
Okay, that's true.
In 1945, they probably got a slap on the wrist.
Right.
Yeah, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
But is there anything more jarring in a tonal shift from him holding his dead mom having a flashback, like a PTSD war flashback, to a little bald-headed cartoon character? That was, like, genuinely kind of upsetting to me.
It's a tonal whiplash, right?
Yeah.
It really serves no purpose because it's never brought up again. Like, he never mentions his mother again or how he's from 1945.
Right.
So you really could have just, like, shifted to Gabriel Byrne being there. I'm like, hey, Brad Pitt, what are you doing here? Oh, it's a long story. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, he mentions it when once he's back in the real world. He mentions it in the car with the neighbor and Jack. But yeah, it's weird. I mean, they don't even explain how his scream of anguish causes him to transport. I mean, and they probably could have done it, like, why does his mom have to die from a drunk driving accident? It doesn't really affect him in any way. He doesn't, until he has to go back, he doesn't really seem like he's running from it.
No.
Right? Like, if that was a thing, like, you could tell, if they played that up a little bit more, it would make a lot more sense. Like, that's the reason why he hangs out in Cool World and he doesn't go back, because he doesn't want to face that. But now it's been, like, 50 years, so.
Or like, he's trying to get back, but doesn't know how. Because, like, maybe his mom's not dead. Like, he's just out. But he loves his mom, obviously. He gets sucked into Cool World. He just wants to get back to his mom. But he doesn't know how.
Right. But she's dead anyway.
Exactly. And then when he comes back, oh, Mama Pitt's dead.
But she would have been dead anyway because he came back into the 90s.
Yeah. This is 104 years old.
Right.
And then she dies.
Yeah, I've waited so long for you to come home, son.
It's been 80. So what I like, we'll get to this point fully jumping ahead, but I love the idea of when he came back into the world that he was in the same condition he was when he left.
Yeah.
In terms of the thing. I was like, all right, that's a cool little thing. I guess that was supposed to be his character, is that he was staying in the toon world because he didn't want to deal with what happened in the real world. But they never really make a point of it.
No.
But I got the feeling that that's supposed to be his character.
Yeah, it's a half-complete thought. And why does he go... why does he teleport there? And then when he comes back, why does he teleport into Jack's house? Was Jack's house where that highway was? Is it just like he went to the same place and just so happened to be the same place? I don't know. These are the questions that I don't have answers for.
See, that would have been interesting, though, because it would have set the precedent that there was a portal created by the professor in the early part of the film with his spike or whatever. So, like, there's a little bit of a rip there.
Right.
But Gabriel Byrne has already been teleporting in other places.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he does it. He does it in his house. He does it. Does he do it in prison? I know he does it in the middle of the desert. Yeah,
he does it a couple times in prison.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. Like, why is it that there's a spike that brings Brad Pitt, but then a toon could just wish you into that world, right? Like, why do you need the spike?
I don't know. We don't have the answers to these questions because there are no rules. There were no rules set out. There was no explanation.
Is the spike brought back later?
It's brought back at the end.
It's the end.
It's the point of the end. That's what happens at the end. Yeah.
Okay.
So Frank screams. Professor tells Frank that the experiment was supposed to transport the professor into the real world, but accidentally transports Frank to the cool world. And Frank has obviously suffered a traumatic brain injury and has trouble forming complete sentences at this moment. professor mentions that this is the first time anyone from the real world has been transported to the cool world. And then we cut to 1992 in Vegas, as Jack Deebs, played by Gabriel Byrne, sits behind bars in his prison cell, which he has a drawing desk in there for some reason. And he's drawing his creation, Holly, talking to her as if she's a real person like a creep. He would probably be very popular in prison, don't you think?
Probably. Why? Because he's an artist?
He's an artist, so he can draw everyone's pornography for them.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, he's not just an artist. He draws, he draws big-titted women. So he's giving out prison bombshell, drawings, really.
That's true. Everyone does seem to really like him when he's leaving.
Yeah, they're pretty, they're sad to see him go, but they're very excited for him.
Yeah, so maybe he's just a nice guy. I don't know.
He does murder the man that was sleeping with his wife, and we never get I assume that actually happened. We never have a storyline where he's like, "Nah, I was innocent."
Right. He never contests that.
He doesn't Andy Dufresne this. He basically just acknowledges that that's why he went to prison, and then we just kind of treat him as a hero at the end of the movie.
Right. '90s.
It's only brought up by like a guy that you could have also went a step further, making him like a gatekeeping comic book person.
Right, yeah.
He's the only one in that room that brings it up when everyone else is looking for an autograph.
But he seems really excited about it. Like, he's not saying that to be a dick. He wants that comic book.
Yeah.
Okay. So he's more like, hey, you killed somebody, didn't you?
He's just a man that like any comic book nerd, he doesn't have tact, basically. The social skills to have a conversation with a guy without bringing up the guy that he murdered.
I mean, look, we've all been to Comic-Con here. We know how some people react when they see something that really excites them. There is no personal space.
Yeah. I like the old dude in the comic book shop where he's like, who the fuck are you?
Right.
Why am I getting this autograph right now? Who are you?
At least he's honest.
I wonder if that guy was... I had thought that guy was like supposed to be a cameo.
A few of those people in the comic book shop were actually the voiceover actors. So it might have been one of the voiceover actors.
I looked into it. I don't think he was. They just made such a point of putting this old person, asking for comic books. And I was like, is he a basis for something? And I looked into it.
Is he like a Stan Lee sort of person in this world?
No, he didn't find anything.
Independent comic book artist that... Like, because that seems very early 90s, this independent guy no one knows about.
It's got to be this guy Murray Podwall, right? Store patron?
Yeah.
That guy's a Murray.
He's literally just a man who wandered onto set.
Might have been a working comic book shop, and he's just like, why am I getting this autograph?
Maybe it was his comic book shop, yeah.
if that scene had gone on, he would have basically just asked, what are you guys doing? We're shooting a movie. Oh, what movie?
Have I ever heard of it?
Yeah.
It hasn't come out yet.
Have I seen it yet?
He's literally asking who are you? I'm Gabriel Byrne. Who's that?
So Holly then pulls Jack into Cool World, and he winds up at some tune club where Holly is there dancing as the other characters look on. She beckons Jack, but his position in Cool World is temporary, and he winds up back in his prison cell after a few seconds. We then cut back to Cool World and Sparks, a purple-skinned zoot suit hustler of sorts, as he traverses the alleyways of Cool World. He interacts with the dregs of the street, all of which might possibly be children, and I'm not 100% sure what his role is in this movie. Felt like it was going to be a little bit bigger than it wound up being, but that is Sparks.
I thought, was he not, he's not the bad guy, right?
No, he
looks like the bad guy.
He looks like
a creepy. He turns out to be a snitch.
Yep, he is a dirty snitch. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was Holly's like right hand man,
or like her pimp.
He really looks after her or something. Yeah.
He's just some random snitch that is always around her.
Yeah.
And attacks children.
Wooden nickels.
Let me ask you guys something about the character of Hollywood, because her art style seems to stick out from everything else. And I was looking into the film to see if Dawn Bluth had anything to do with this film, because she looks exactly like a copy of, it looks like Ralph Bakshi traced Princess Daphne from the Dragon's Lair game.
Sure.
Yes. She's very close.
Yeah. If you just look, but then everything else is Ralph Bakshi, the bastardization of Disney, of gross near racist caricatures.
Well, you do see some Mickey Mouse stuff in there. There's mm-hmm. there's like a Mickey Mouse billboard, and but it's like the badass Mickey Mouse look.
Right.
It is definitely Mouse. Yeah, right.
Yeah, there's the one you don't take home
to your parents. It's bad.
There's a point where we look down the throat of one of like Holly's goons. She has a posse as the bigger one, and you see Ralph Bakshi's version of Geppetto and Pinocchio stuck in his stomach like the whale.
I missed that one.
Yeah. Frank pulls up to Hollywood's apartment. He's there to investigate the presence of the Noid at the club. Holly's apartment is just littered with cartoon vermin for no reason other than just to make noise. Holly is also hung up on the idea of going over to the real world, sparked by a legend of Vegas Vinny. Holly comes on to Frank, hoping to fuck her into a real woman, which I guess has been the proven outcome of such an event, though we don't have any evidence that has ever happened before. That seems to be Frank's specific job to the police to prevent that from happening. But he's also the only Noid in Cool World, as far as we could tell. Once again, these rules just don't make a whole bunch of sense.
So Brad Pitt is a cock block.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. That seems to be his only job, because that seems to be the only rule in Cool World.
That's such a weird job.
Yeah, because when they call the cops on the dice game, that's actual cops, poppers, as they call them.
Hmm.
It's not Nails or Frank answering the call.
Right.
Well, he's a detective. Why would he stoop so low to such, you know, just petty misdemeanors?
Right.
And what a surprise, a former military man becoming a police officer.
So Frank leaves, and then we cut to Jack being released from prison, as everybody's very excited and happy for him to see him go. He moves into a house and catches the attention of his neighbor. He then goes to a comic shop, and the girl behind the counter fawns all over him, realizing he is the Jack Deebs. Deebs?
Was it Deebs?
Deebs. Yeah.
And then a whole bunch of guys there ask for his autograph. She asks him out for coffee, but he turns her down. One of the guys mentions that he should do a comic on the guy that he killed for finding him in bed with his wife. And then Jack leaves after that. Back in Cool World, a cute rabbit is playing dice with a bunch of toon degenerates who cheat the rabbit out of its winnings. And Jack somehow winds back up in Cool World, so they decide to hassle him instead. Then Holly shows up and tries to get Jack to fuck her. And the cops show up to bust the hoodlums, and they pile into Holly's roadster with Jack, and they peel off down the twisted highways that Jack once drew. Meanwhile, Frank goes to visit his girlfriend Lonette, a toon. Frank acts very aggressive towards her, towards all the female toons, I should say. Like, if this was an actual human actress, it would be a bit disturbing. Nails Frank's partner, a cigar-smoking spider, comes up, telling Frank that they have to go because Holly is with the Noid again. Then they head to the club. Holly and her crew show up to the club with Jack. After dispatching of the bouncer, they enter, and Jack is immediately accosted by Frank. Frank has to reinforce the one rule in Cool World: Noids cannot have sex with toons. Frank mentions that other Noids have come to Cool World, but how and why? We never understand why. Jack winds up back in the real world.
I just figured out. Noid is short for humanoid.
There you go. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, Dan.
Does that also go with the Noid from Domino's? Is that also the reason why they're...
I mean, that's the first thing that I thought of.
Well, you should avoid the Noid.
You gotta avoid the Noid.
And that's what they're saying.
That's the one rule in Cool World. Avoid the Noid. Is this a backdoor Domino's commercial?
That would be mind-blowing.
If that's true, we're getting a remake to Cool World coming out soon, since the Noid is back.
Ralph Bakshi got paid by Domino's. Just make it as abstract as humanly possible.
Right, and that's, like, some of the severed heads are actually the Noid's head, and it's just you don't notice right. It really.
Yeah, it's very on Domino's. It's their brand to be very abstract.
Yeah, that's how they make pizza.
Abstract pizza?
It's an abstract concept of what pizza is supposed to be.
It's the bastardized version of pizza.
If you squint, and it looks like pizza.
It's like having a 9-year-old make it after just describing pizza to them.
Right. So Frank goes to Lonette's apartment. She tries to come on to him, but Frank stops her. So I'm assuming Frank has been celibate for 50 years. Lonette tries to push the limits of what they can do, but then Nails barges in and Frank leaves with him. What other rules is Frank enforcing? That's a good question. Why is Nails in such a hurry to leave all the time? Is this a common occurrence to keep Frank gainfully employed? Does he get
a
paycheck?
Good point. Right. Like, how often are humans trying to bang toons in Cool World?
We know he's the first one to ever go into Cool World.
Right.
We're told that by the professor. So I guess it was just a swinging door after that. After
I think there's a vague illusion that it's happened before Gabriel Byrne, mm-hmm. but we're just watching the story of Jack Deeds.
I think Brad Pitt mentions that others have been involved with Holly, but none of them have been crazy enough to go all the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's tried. She's tried to fuck other guys.
Who do you think, like, Mel Gibson was one of them?
What an odd pull. Why Mel Gibson?
Why? Because we're talking about, like, you know, crazy. Late 80s, early 90s studs.
Okay. So you think that, like, famous people go to Cool World to fuck?
Sure. Why not? Mel Gibson's crazy.
Are you trying to imply that possibly Bob Hoskins has also showed up, but then was swayed not to?
Right. Well, yeah, because he had himself a regular dame, right? He didn't have to worry about Hollywood. I'm trying to, like, so, like, Tom Cruise, possibly. Because, again, he's crazy. He's batshit crazy.
Sure.
Yeah. It's only the crazy ones who go to Toontown or to Cool World. And
you know Eddie Murphy did.
Is this part of the whole what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas thing? They have a Toon World?
It's probably like Westworld. It's like this world's version of Westworld, where it's just like the rich can just go anytime they want and just be depraved.
Right. And just kill James Marsden as many times as they want.
Even Cool World has a James Marsden
absolutely.
Avatar.
You're right. How it has to happen often enough where Brad Pitt gets to remain employed. We never see his employer. Is he self-employed?
He's just a private detective, maybe.
He's a gumshoe.
Well, I thought his badge said Cool World PD.
It does. Yeah, That's right. But we never see him interact with the poppers.
Nope. But this is the only thing he does is just follow Hollywood around and wait for Nails to tell him that the other Noid showed up.
Right. Do you think he eats food?
Yeah, that's a good question. He must, right? He's still human.
Right. Like, do the laws of, you know, humanity.
He does smoke a Toon cigarette. So, and I guess you could have sex with a Toon woman. So,
yeah. And I thought he poured himself a drink at one point, but maybe I missed that.
Well, I don't remember.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just misremembering. But yeah, I guess because it seems like all the other rules are suspended, as in, like, he doesn't age and he doesn't get sick or hurt or anything. So it may just be a non-need.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that's a good point. Because, like, if you think about it, he has the life, right? He's Brad Pitt in his mid to late 20s, right? Yeah. So he's smoking hot. You can't get diseases. You can't really get hurt. Can he get hurt? I think he can, right?
He definitely did not want to fall off that apartment building.
But so you can't get sick. You probably don't need air because there's no air for Toons. The only problem is he's in a shitty, shitty cartoon.
Yeah.
Right. If he's in a better cartoon world, it's probably aces.
He can't fuck, though.
Yeah.
But it's like he seems like he's not really, it's not like bothering him all that much. So he's like, he's OK with it. Like, he wants to bang Lynette.
Yeah.
He wants to nail her. But then it's not like he's going around looking to nail any kind of tune. There's only two good looking tunes, by the way. But everyone else is hideous.
Yeah, so you probably, if you're off those two women, you probably get rid of the problem of Noids banging tunes.
Right. Yeah, so because everyone else is just like a grotesque.
Completely unfuckable.
Right. It's like in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, the fake, what's her name? Jessica Rabbit.
Yeah. And there is one that looks almost exactly like that fake one.
Yes. So it's everyone other than Hollywood and Lynette is that.
Yep. Yeah. Frank and Nails wind up at Holly's apartment, but the door knocker won't let them in again, saying it's a private party. So they have to climb the apartment building exterior. It's a long climb up. Nails almost drops Frank, but eventually they are able to break into the apartment building by breaking a window. Frank goes into the party as Nails waits outside, and Sparks is there again, still not sure of his role in all of this. Frank threatens Holly, telling her to stay away from Jack. She tells him that he's a coward because he could go back to the real world anytime he wants and just chooses not to, and then he leaves. As Frank goes to leave through the broken window, Jack shows up through the front door with Holly's goons. Door knocker says he has an appointment, but the other ones have to stay outside. He goes up, and Holly comes and brings him into her bedroom, and then they fuck, causing an explosion that blows out the windows. And then Holly turns into Kim Basinger. You can be happy or sad about that, depending on however you feel.
Oh, man. So much shade.
It was one thing I was like, she is objectively an attractive woman, but I think what comes down to is she's too old for this role. And she's like, as Steve mentioned, she's almost 40. She's not exactly the sex kitten Marilyn Monroe stand-in that the cartoon Hollywood would have you believe.
And you know, it's funny because like you have the two ends of the spectrum. You have Kim Basinger, who's a little too old in this role. But then you want Drew Barrymore, who's just a little too young for that role.
Yeah.
Because could you imagine 17-year-old Drew Barrymore palling around with Gabriel Byrne?
No, not at all.
Like, that's gross.
Yeah. There had to have been a happy medium.
Are we talking about in this movie Drew Barrymore or in real life Drew Barrymore?
In this movie.
I think 17-year-old Drew Barrymore is too much for Gabriel Byrne.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to read lines. Get off the
table. At this point, she wasn't famous enough, but Pam Anderson would have been the perfect stand-in.
I was literally just thinking that.
Yep.
I was like, was she young enough? Was she old enough for this?
I think she was old enough because she might have already been doing Home Improvement.
I would think so.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's the perfect one.
She's 4 years away from Barbed Wire, 1967. Yeah. So she was like 20, 25.
Perfect. She would have given the same amount of, you know, acting skills in this performance as Kim Basinger did.
Yeah, she probably wouldn't have that Brooklyn accent there at some point. Yeah. Too.
She might have even given more, being that she wasn't as famous.
That's true.
Yeah. And
she's got to try a little harder.
Yeah, she wouldn't have had, like, the dust-up with Bakshi to begin with.
Right.
Like, Kim Basinger was already established, and so she had the pull to, you know, say, I want to make a more PG-13 movie.
Oh, that's a good point.
Pam Anderson would have just went along with it.
Right. And we get a totally different movie. That's a good point.
Yeah, you definitely need like a Playboy playmate, like Erica Eleniak. She was in Under Siege this year too. Would have been good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not Kim Basinger, who's not looking to as a woman in her 40s or almost 40s should not want to be a masturbation fodder for 12-year-olds and perverts.
Well, to be fair, I feel like this movie might have cheered up some kids in the hospital just seeing her as a cartoon.
Sure.
So, mission accomplished?
There you go. Everybody's happy, right?
Yeah.
Except for Ralph Bakshi. Nails drops Frank off at the bar that Lonette works at and goes back to the precinct to man the phones. Frank and Lynette get cozy in a booth. Meanwhile, Sparks calls the precinct to tell Nails that Holly fucked Jack and is planning to make a trip to the real world. So Nails calls Frank, but then loses the nerve to tell him about Holly and just tells him he's making sure he's having a good time. And this scene of waiting for Frank to get the phone call is obnoxious as fuck, because the phone has to go through the entire bar.
Yeah, and also, are we to believe that every time the phone rings, it hurts the phone?
Yeah, it was weird. Yeah.
And also the another example of Brad Pitt holding something in Toon World and it not matching up specifically, because I think at some point the phone was nowhere near his ear.
Yeah.
It's so distracting. It's so obvious.
It's a director that knows animation but doesn't really necessarily know live action.
Exactly. He can't marry the two.
Yeah. What Zemeckis did on Who Framed Roger Rabbit is pretty impressive. That's all we can say about that. Meanwhile, Holly is more or less having a breakdown because she's now Kim Basinger. I don't think because she thinks she's almost 40. I think it was just she was surprised by it. Nails tries to pump himself up to go arrest Holly and then goes off to apprehend her without the help of Frank. Back at Holly's, Holly packs up her things to go to the real world. Jack wants to stay in Cool World, but Holly wants to go and experience the real world. She says she has to go say goodbye to the fellas, and it has a Brooklyn accent all of a sudden. She also steals Jack's fountain pen, which is a weapon in a world made of ink, which we found that out earlier, but I skipped over it. She goes to talk to the gang, and that's where Nail shows up and tries to stop Holly, but she grabs him and sucks him up with the fountain pen. So now he's trapped in the fountain pen. She then goes back to Jack, and they teleport or whatever back to the real world. For some reason, Holly lands on the couch while Jack can't get the hang of the whole teleporting thing and falls flat on his A commotion at Jack's house causes Jack's neighbors to come over to make sure he's okay, and they are introduced to Holly, who now can't put words together to form a sentence, and Jack introduces her as his friend and more or less shoves his neighbors out the door. A few
She goes straight bimbo with a hard O.
Yeah. Into the real world. Like, she goes Brendan Fraser in Encino Man.
Yes.
Or like, Multipass. She plays like Mila Jovovich and Fifth Element. A few tunes gather around the crime scene where Nails got inked, including Sparks, who I still can't figure out his role in all of this. Frank shows up and Sparks tells him that Hollywood made it with Jack and now she's not a tune anymore, and that's who inked Nails. Jack takes Holly to a nightclub where Frank Sinatra Jr. is performing, and Holly wants to experience everything immediately. She wants to drink all the drinks, she wants to meet every guy, she wants them to smell her. Jack starts getting a little bit possessive of her, so she rebels and walks up to Frank Sinatra Jr. and tells him, "Let's make love." Which causes Jack to get super jealous in the worst line reading of the movie and gets himself kicked out of the club. Outside, Jack grabs the bouncer by the face and makes his face glow some sort of cartoon glow, but doesn't really do anything else otherwise, and the guy leaves. As Jack goes to get in his car to leave, he starts turning into some sort of old-timey cartoon clown, and his car turns into a clown car, both of which for a split second. Inside the club, Holly sings Let's Make Love with Frank Sinatra Jr. I was thinking just, man, Frank Sinatra Jr. just did not inherit his dad's looks at all.
No.
Not his looks, not his class, not... by the 90s, that was just passé.
Yeah.
He worked in Vegas, and that was about it.
Yeah, in his old age, Frank Sinatra would have been better in this movie.
There's no way you get Frank Sinatra in.
No.
I would have rather had Phil Hartman playing Frank Sinatra than Frank Sinatra Jr.
Meanwhile, Frank is having an argument with Lonette because he has to go into the real world and bring Holly back. Now Holly starts turning into a clown-like cartoon too, as Jack starts to turn into a doodle himself more and more. Lonette sees Frank off. In order to go back, he has to remember the last time he was in the real world, which just so happens to be the moment his mom died in a bike accident 50 years prior. So that's sad. And that sends him back to the real world. Back in the real world, Jack is freaking out about blinking into a tune and is now immediately regretting ever being involved with Holly, because she is a nightmare, as Kim Basinger. Holly sees a sign for Las Vegas and thinks back to Vegas Vinny and how there must be a power spike that will turn her into a real person permanently. Jack says they're not going to the hotel, so she kicks him out of the car and drives off. Literally kicks him out of the car. Frank makes it back to the real world and winds up in Jack's house, which makes a huge ruckus and awakens the neighbor. Jack comes home to find Frank. Frank realizes that Jack is turning into a tune. Jack tells him that it's happening to Holly, too. Neighbor comes over, and Jack tells Frank about Holly wanting to go find the spike, and the neighbor offers to drive her mom's car. Holly pulls up to the hotel and starts asking everyone she could find about Vegas Vinny. On the way to the hotel, Frank tells Jack and the neighbor girl all about Vegas Vinny and how it was based on Doc Whiskers, the professor that he met when he first made it to Cool World.
I thought they were going to be a little more harsh about throwing her out after she just went around talking to everybody about Vegas Vinny, you know, or maybe in the Vegas sense, which is like, oh, it's whatever, some crazy lady, we'll just say no to her. But I didn't get the fact with her character, we just go around and just ask everybody the question. You would think they'd working in a club in Cool World, she'd have the idea of like who to talk to find somebody.
This is all sense of socialization and speaking, which is weird because it's supposed to, it almost treats her like she's a fish out of water, but she does have a sense of socialization regardless of her tunes.
Yeah, she goes from being a girl boss in Cool World and knowing how to work all the inner workings of the world, but then just has no sense of like, let me speak to the manager.
Yeah. If she's had 50 years of trying to fuck men, she should be able to kind of handle herself in Vegas.
Yeah, she never really uses her feminine wiles in that way. Only for Frank Sinatra Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Frank then says that him and Doc Whiskers mapped out the tunnels between the real world and the cool world, but they says that they realized that there were ways that crossing over could lead to the end of the universe. So Holly gets kicked out of the casino for having no money, and she starts turning into a tune again. She comes across a guy in a trench coat who starts talking to her about being a tune, and she shakes him down until it's revealed that it is Doc Whiskers himself. Doc Whiskers says that there is a spike at the top of the casino, but he didn't have the power to hold it and tells Holly that it will do her no good. So Holly tells him to shove off, and nothing that he's going to do to stop her from touching Spike, and she tries to ink him. But in the real world, it makes Doc explode for some reason.
It's like a pinprick, I guess.
Yeah, which I guess he's full of air, as tunes are. Frank and Jack show up at that moment as Frank goes chasing Holly up the stairwell, as Jack and the neighbor try to pull the Doc back together. As Frank chases Holly up the stairwell, she pushes him over the side, but he manages to hang onto the balcony. She manages to get away in that moment. As she makes it onto a floor, she turns into a toon and is able to move through a wall, because we haven't established any rules in this film other than toons and noids can't fuck. So, of course, that happens.
Why is she also turning into a clown toon? Why isn't she just reverting back to her original form?
It's a fair question.
She's a clown. She's acting clownish.
It's just another version of There's No Rule.
Yep. Yeah. It's punishment, maybe? I don't know. But then who's the one doing the punishing?
Right, because it's all made up in Gabriel Byrne's imagination, right? That's kind of what we've established.
Right. Well, that's what Gabriel Byrne thinks, at least.
Okay.
Right? Because it existed in 1945. We don't know to what extent. At least Doc Whiskers was in this world in 1945. Yeah. So Jack is somehow tapping into a world that already existed for his own creativity. And I don't know. They don't never really explain what he's created and what he didn't. And if he creates something on paper, does it then exist in Cool World? Hmm. Like that episode of Looney Tunes where, you know, the animator is fighting with Daffy Duck.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, the pencil just goes around him. And
Yeah, man.
But that was done so well. Even in, like, what was that? That was, like, the 50s, right?
It was probably, yeah.
Right? And just, like, it's incredible that those short stories were just so much better than this full motion picture.
Yeah. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think it would make this movie so much better if there was just some semblance of sense.
Yes. Yeah.
And maybe that was lost. Maybe that was lost in the trying to turn this into a PG-13 movie that Kim Basinger to go to the hospitals and show sick children.
I like also like the very first shot of Kim Basinger as a person, as a close-up of her chest with just her nips rock hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll fly over well with the kiddies.
Yeah. I mean, it was 1992. Jennifer Aniston was going to be doing that in 2 years. Every Thursday night.
That's a good point.
Showing up.
Struck it rich.
Nipples first in front of a live studio audience.
And no one complained.
Nope. Frank finds the wall that she went through and follows her into the room. He tells her that she should go back to Cool World. So she tries to run through the wall again and just smashes right into it. In slow motion, which just makes this even that more ridiculous.
Yeah. Does he like distract her? I don't get what happens here.
I can't remember. Is she a toon when she goes through the wall the first time?
Yeah.
When she goes through the first time, but then the second time, I think she thinks she has control over it, but she doesn't. And then she just runs like a clumsy asshole into the wall.
Yeah. Cause it's real person Holly when she hits the wall. So I'm guessing she could go through it if she's a toon at that moment. So then she goes on the balcony and Frank follows. Meanwhile, the neighbor manages to piece the doctor back together. Jack doesn't seem to be doing shit at that moment. It's all up to the neighbor to put him back together. Holly starts climbing the balcony, trying to make it to the roof. Frank threatens to shoot her. And she says that she's scared of heights and needs his help to come down. So he goes to help her. But she tricked him. And she turns into a toon and she's got a vengeful look in her eye, which we don't really even get to see coverage of that. But assume that it happened, and she pushes him off the roof and he falls to his death. And that's our hero in this movie. Falling to his death off screen. So the professor tells Jack that it's his opportunity to be a hero. You know, the guy that killed the guy that was sleeping with his wife. So Jack grows some toon arms that stretch all the way up to the hotel top and goes to try to stop Holly. Holly makes it up to the roof and removes the spike from the sign, opening a portal between the real world and Cool World, and unleashes chaos. Holly turns back into her original toon form because she's not the clown anymore. Jack turns into a superhero type character. And everyone around Vegas starts turning into cartoon versions of themselves.
And this is where, and obviously we've already stated that there's no plot or any story in this, but her whole motivation, whole movie, was to be real and to be in the real world. And now she's fine being her doodle in this real world. Yep. Like the switch makes no sense.
Yeah. I don't know what she was... Yeah, because she specifically she goes to get the spike to turn become real. Maybe just the being faced with being that cartoon, that hideous cartoon clown. She was just like, well, I don't really want to be a cartoon, but I'm here in the real world and I'm my sexy self. So that's like a good compromise, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had two notes about this. One, when she's climbing up to the spike, there's a shot of her climbing a ladder. She basically climbs ladders like people do in the WWE. A lot of effort, very slowly.
Yeah. And always then, looking down to make sure the person is right there.
Exactly. Which gives Jack time to get up to her. But the other thing is, like, how much of, like, when she pulls the spike out, how much of a big ripoff of Ghostbusters is it when all the tunes come out and it looks exactly like the scene of when the firehouse explodes?
Right. Yeah. That's a good point.
It felt like maybe they had one idea and they couldn't stick with that idea for whatever reason. And they just couldn't decide on an ending.
Yeah.
When Byrne turns into the superhero, it's super awkward. Like, it really makes no sense in that, like, he's becoming a clown, but then he becomes a superhero.
Right.
Why are people turning into these things?
Yeah.
It makes no sense. Make sense.
Yeah, it's like Super Mario Brothers. The worlds are merging, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Like, well, you see on the street, like, they go through Vegas, and that's how it's also like the Ghostbusters montage of, like, all the ghosts start showing up. People start turning into cartoons.
Right.
And a lot of them kind of make sense. Like, people, you know, just fat Americans turning into cows. There's that one shifty guy at the table who turns into a snake. That kind of makes sense.
Like, yeah.
You're turning into the worst version of yourself as an awful Bakshi cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But why Jack turns into a superhero that's not even voiced by Gabriel Byrne, because it's Maurice LaMarche doing the superhero voice.
Yep.
And his lips never move.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They didn't have budget to animate his mouth.
No. The ending is a cluster.
Yep. So Jack tries to stop her, but she kicks him in the dick and he gets taken away by some sort of dark flying ink beast. Holly drops the spike, and Super Jack flies off to retrieve it. Jack tries to replace the spike, but then has to fight a whole bunch of ink monsters. Meanwhile, Nails pulls himself out of the pen and sees Frank's body lying on the street. Holly tries to get Jack to give up the spike, but as he is about to, one of the ink monsters makes it obvious that it's a trick, so Super Jack thinks better of it and goes to return the spike to the sign again. As he does, all the tunes that escaped get sucked back into the sign, and the portal closes, and Jack and Holly disappear with them. Then Doc and Nails go back to Cool World with Frank's body, leaving the neighbor girl stuck in Las Vegas by herself.
It's a Lynette, good character art.
Yep. Lynette sadly walks along the streets of Cool World, missing Frank. She goes back to her apartment to find Nails with Frank's body. Nails tells her that Hollywood killed him, but then Lynette realizes that if Holly killed him while she was a toon, then that means Frank will turn into a toon, because we never established any rules besides the toon/noid fucking thing. Frank becomes a toon, and they did Brad Pitt pretty dirty on this rendering, if you ask me. Yeah.
He looks like Rin Tin Tin.
He's like a Sunday comic strip character. Oh. Like if David Byrne was in Blondie. Not the band Blondie, the comic strip comic. And Lynette and Frank can now fuck, so they're happy with that, I guess. Right? Toons can fuck each other. No one ever said they couldn't. But then Nails interrupts again, but they kick his ass out. And Holly and Super Jack are stuck in some toon barren wasteland for reasons that are unclear. And that is the end of Cool World. If there's any one thing to be said about it, it makes no sense.
In the hard R-rated version, Nails joins Brad Pitt and Lynette, and it's just like super handy, you know?
Yep.
Like Nails is
are everywhere.
Yeah, helping out Lynette and Brad Pitt, and it's just like he really helps them experience something like they've never thought possible.
Yeah, it's like Fritz the Cat.
Oh yeah, but way dirtier, I think.
Yeah, Fritz the Cat's such a better movie than this, and we hated Fritz the Cat.
At least that had like a message.
Yeah.
Fritz the Cat had somewhat of a plot. Sure. Yes, the message of Fritz the Cat was just like really like awkward and I guess not well said, but this has zero message in it other than toons can't bang humans. That's the message.
Yeah.
Remember, kids, resist all urges to bang cartoons.
I think the internet was a direct opposition of this movie.
Yeah. Like,
Bill Gates is like, I'll show you Ralph Bakshi. Take this.
Yeah. Let's watch, I can't even think. Watch Daria fuck Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah. It's a whole group of deviant artists begs to differ with Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah.
Al Gore saw this movie, went home, and immediately wrote Rule 34.
Everybody has the same story as we do. They watched it way too young, and they just rebelled against the message of the movie, which there isn't another message, so that's the only thing they could take away from it.
Right. Again, my grandparents didn't really understand what was... My grandparents were one of those grandparents where they would let me do things that my parents... Like, they would let me watch things my parents wouldn't. Like, I couldn't watch Ren and Stimpy with my parents, but I could watch it with my grandparents. And I guess this was one of those things like, oh, well, you know, oh, PG-13, he's 10, so he should be fine. And they had no clue what this was and, like, how it, like, just ruined everything going forward and just, like, my whole perception of cartoons. And, yeah, I wasn't an innocent child after seeing this movie.
Yeah, I don't really have much more to say about this one. Yeah. This was a rough one. All right. I guess we're getting to the plug your shit aspect, though. Steve, why don't you plug your shit?
Sure. So join us every Friday for a new episode of Hot Nation USA, and just search Hot Nation USA on any podcatcher. We're on all of those. And follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Hot Nation USA. Don't forget the USA, because otherwise you'll get a brewery somewhere out in Washington, I believe.
Nice.
But yeah, we'll be talking about beer, mostly of the Mid-Atlantic region, but you know, we try to talk whatever comes through our way, and you'll get history, you'll get interviews, you'll get all kinds of things. You'll learn about beer styles and some homebrewing tips from time to time.
Great. All right. Dan, what do you got?
Oh, yo, shit. Yeah, real quick, my personal Twitter at DeAquino122. I also help run our Real Play D&D podcast, Stranger Damies Twitter. That is at Stranger Damies. Check there for any, you know, funny memes, our streaming schedule, our episode release schedule. And that's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, so the Stranger Damies release schedule, we episodes release every other Wednesday on the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from. We do new sessions every other Friday, so I don't think there'll be one this Friday. It'll be next Friday, but as Dan mentioned, the Twitter is the best place to verify that. I'm also trying to get all the videos up on YouTube as well to try and catch people up so they can watch the stream. Hopefully that'll be up by the, not this session when we're recording this, but the one after that. I'm hoping to have them all up and ready so people can go into that session fresh. And then we also have our gaming podcast, the Game Vault podcast. You can search for it on all socials, the Game Vault Pod. We air every other Monday podcast there. But we do stream, which is our Twitch channel, which is where Stranger Damies is. It's at twitch.tv/GameVaultPod. There we stream Apex on Wednesdays. I do an RPG stream on Thursdays. Right now I'm playing Paper Mario. Fridays is when Stranger Damies would air. Saturday, Jen does either Monster Hunter Rise or Dead by Daylight. Sunday is Dan's Dan of the Wild, where he plays through Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And then he does pop up at different points during the week. He wants to play a couple hours as well. And then Monday is our final day, where Tom plays our retro roulette game that we pick every podcast. And then also he's playing through some old school RPGs or old games that he wants to play all the way through. Right now we're playing Suikoden from PlayStation 1. So feel free to check that out.
Great. And we are They Call This Movie. You can find us at any podcast streaming app just by searching They Call This Movie. That's at Spreaker, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us just by searching They Call This Movie. We're the maindamie.com. That's our main website where we post all of our shows, and hypothetically, we post articles there too. You can find us on all socials just by searching The Main Damie. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, search The Main Damie and we'll pop right up. We're also on TikTok now with They Call This Movie. So search for They Call This Movie on TikTok and we will show up. Also a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com and on all socials and podcast streaming apps just by searching Geek Vibes Nation. Tons of great shows. If you're into geek stuff, there is surely a show for you. That's going to wrap us up. This week, we talked about Cool World and we had Steve as a guest. Thank you, Steve, for coming on. Hope to have you
Thanks
on
for having me on, guys.
Soon.
Yeah,
and no maybe problem. We'll have a better movie the next time if we have you on again.
Sure.
We'll let you pick the shitty movie that we have to watch so we can blame you.
I'm good with that.
The director of Cool World is Ralph Bakshi. So for Dan Aquino, Mark Myers, and Steve, this is Anthony LaVecchio telling Ralph Bakshi, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?
Clima dice que va a llover. El app de McDonald's que toca Mac Delivery. Ordena Mac Delivery en el app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.